The running time for this Rain Hamcast podcast is 18 minutes 37 seconds. There are 5-second breaks to reset Echo Link and All-Star timers about every 2 minutes 50 seconds.
This is Rain Hamcast podcast number 78, hosted October 29th, 2022. It is voiced by Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, and Will Rogers, K5WLR. Otis Vicens, NP4G, grew up in Puerto Rico with an appreciation for radio, a love of learning, and a career in orthodontics. In January 2023, Otis will be one of the crew members headed to Bouvet Island as part of the 3Y0J de-expedition. Otis was recently interviewed by Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, for the weekly QSO Today podcast. This is our first of two excerpts from that interview.
I started ham radio when I was 16, back at home. You know, I started with CB radios and playing with that for a little while. One day I was talking to a gentleman there and he said that he was a KP4. And I was like, KP4, what's that? And then he said, well, it's ham radio. He started to tell me about it. And he said, it's very easy. All you have to do is you go to Radio Shack, buy the book, and then call this guy up and he'll tell you about the exam. So I got the book, I went to study it, and then my dad drove me over to the University of Puerto Rico in San Juan, where they were doing the testing.
Your hometown is?
It's Humacao. I'm on the southeast of the island, roughly about 45 minutes, right on the water.
How many families live in Humacao?
30,000 people, maybe? 40,000?
So it's a reasonable-sized town.
Yes.
And it has a Radio Shack.
Yeah, we had a Walmart, so that's a good reference. Yeah, we didn't have a Walmart back then, but we had a Radio Shack. We actually had two of them.
So you kind of discovered ham radio at age 16, and you touched on CB radio. Did you have an interest in radio and electronics even earlier? Was this just something that you suddenly discovered, or is it something that kind of grew out of an interest in electronics and communications?
More likely communications. I had a little band. I used to play drums, so we went to a practice at my buddy's and got a handy talkie. And I'm like, what's that? I said, oh, you turn it on, you talk to people. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's how I got started. And then the move over to ham radio. I remember my initial call sign was November Papa 3 Juliet Golf back in January of 97. And I've been hooked up ever since. After that, I graduated high school, and then I went to Purdue University. And, you know, ham radio, and there's a club there. It's Whiskey Yankee Bravo. And I went up there, said, hello, I'm such and such. I like to do radio, and here we are. And they hooked me up. The first time I tried HF radio was up there, and it was very involving, and there were a nice group of folks, of people there. I was there for 2 years, and then after that, I came back home, San Juan, to the dental school here. No radio for 4 years, pretty much. I unfortunately missed the peak of I think it was cycle 23 back in 2000. And so I missed that one because I was studying. But after that, I went to New York for my specialty training. I did pediatric dentistry first in Brooklyn, New York, and then the 3 years that I spent after that at Stony Brook University in Long Island, I said, you know, I'm hooked to this stuff. So that was pretty much the first time I got a chance to go to Dayton frequently and started, you know, seeing what's out there.
You got your first license at age 16, and your hometown is Humacao, Puerto Rico, which Puerto Rico is a possession of the United States of America, not a state. But the licensing is done by the FCC. Did Humacao, a town of 30,000 people, did it have an amateur radio club?
Not really. There were some hams here that were scattered around. I did have a good friend, and this is a good story, actually. There was an older gentleman. He was a doctor here in town. He was very good friends with my dad. And they, you know, they always meet in the post office, you know, 11 a.m. when the mail comes out. And then he would always show my dad, you know, hey, I got this QSL card and so and so. And then one day my dad says, well, listen, I think my son got a ham radio license too. And he said, what do you mean? Yeah, this is call sign. And he's like, well, listen, tell Otis, just show up to my house, knock on the door and identify himself. So it was cool. One day, you know, I'm back here from college and I'm bored, you know, summer or whatever. And I said, hey, dad, remember that guy? Please take me to his house. And I'm like, okay. So I go up there. It was a few minutes away from our home. I literally did exactly the same thing. I knocked on the door, and he said, hello, and I'm him, Dr. Jonah. This is OTD Sands. My dad told me to come here and knock your door. And I was like, great. How'd you get here? My dad drove me. Tell your dad to go home. I'll drive you back. Okay, no problem. So we go into the little shack. His call sign was KP4 Alpha Zulu. And he starts showing me the QSL cards, the King Hussein card, and the Japan, and talking 10 meters at midnight, 10 meters being open 24 hours a day back in those sun cycles. And I'm like, this is pretty cool. He even said, do you have an HF radio? And I said, no, I'm only doing 2 meters now. Oh, no, that's not right. And we walked to his garage, and he had a FT, I think it was like a 101 from Yaesu, like really old stuff. Okay, here's your radio. And then he said, do you have an antenna? I'm like, no, I only have 2 meters. I said, okay. So we drove over, we came down, and then we're like looking at the house, and we're like, well, you see that tree there next to your house? I think we could put a 50-meter dipole in here. So he gave me the instructions, gave me the balloon, and I made the antenna, put it up, started doing HF when I was like 16, thanks to this guy. He later on passed away a couple years later. He had some health problems, but it's dearly to my heart. Whenever I tell people, local people, the story, they always say, oh, Tonio was, that was him, that's how generous he was. So it's pretty, pretty cool.
Would you say he was a mentor of yours?
Yeah, just for like that day.
Just for that day. Interesting. So he gives you your first HF rig. He tells you to hang a 15-meter dipole from the tree.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Sometimes that's what it takes for somebody to come into your life and get you going and then disappear.
Yeah. I went back to the States for school. And then I would come here during breaks. And we rarely see each other, maybe for like a coffee or something. And that was it. But by the time I actually finished, graduated, and came home, permanently, he already passed away. So,
were you in high school abroad?
No, high school I did here in Puerto Rico at home, my hometown.
You get your amateur radio license at age 16. There wasn't a lot of activity except somehow you had a 2-meter handheld. Did you get that from Radio Shack?
No, I think my mom got it from AES on a trip to Orlando.
You finish high school at
16.
Most American kids finish high school at 18.
Because the problem was I'm very, very hyper in school and when I was a baby, so my mom put me in school early, so I was a year ahead of everybody.
You finished high school at 16 and then you go away to Purdue?
Yes.
What did you study at Purdue?
I knew I wanted to be a dentist, so I went and did biology over there. And I just went over and did my prerequisites for dental school, and I was only there for 2 years. I didn't finish my undergraduate degree. Then I applied to dental school in Puerto Rico, and they accepted me, and I came back home for the next 4 years.
It wasn't a requirement to have a BA to go to dental school in Puerto Rico?
Back then, as long as you had prerequisites and you completed whatever number of credits required, it was fine. And I did my interview, I did the whole thing, and I got into dental school. I was 18 by then. So I was the youngest in the dental school for like 3 years. I graduated as a dentist at age 22. That's the age pretty much everybody's starting dental school. Thanks to my mom for putting me in school that early, I guess.
You're listening to the first of two excerpts from a QSO Today interview of Otis Vicens, NP4G, conducted by QSO Today's Eric Guth, 4Z1UG. Otis is scheduled to be a participant in the 3Y0GAD expedition to Bouvet Island in January 2023. We'll continue our first of two excerpts from Eric Guth, 4Z1UG's interview, after this station ID. This is Rain Hamcast Podcast number 78. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. This is the Radio Amateur Information Network. We'll be right back.
This is the Rain Hamcast, available from therainreport.com and YouTube.
Now, did you do a stint as a dentist before you decided to go into orthodontics?
Yes, well, my mom's a pediatric dentist, so with her, teeth were about. We used to hang out at the office every once in a while, and then, going to dental school. And after that, I wanted to do pediatric dentistry. And so when I was there, I had a professor. His name is Stan Alexander, and he was the program director at Stony Brook. He would come on like Tuesdays, one day a week, to teach us about orthodontics. And I really liked the whole topic, the whole atmosphere. I liked him a lot. And I told him, Dr. Alexander, I'd like to continue my training and I'd like to continue under you. And he said, well, okay, apply. Make sure you apply a couple places. And then, I applied, did the whole process, interviews, stuff like that. And He graciously accepted me and changed my life forever. He believed in me and he gave me the opportunity. So I'm forever thankful for him. And you know, funny thing is, he was born exactly the same day as my mother, except that he was born in Brooklyn and my mom was born in San Juan. But it's exactly the same day, the same year. So I say that he could be my father.
So your mother's a pediatric dentist, and that's how you got interested in dentistry.
Yes.
That's a pretty amazing story. Did you study orthodontics in San Juan, or did you go to Stony Brook?
Stony Brook for that. So after the 2 years of pediatric, I went 3 years at Stony Brook University. That's in the middle of Long Island, pretty much, on the North Shore. And I did my 3 years there, and I knew I wanted to come home. So once I finished graduating and all that, I moved home. And then I started my practice inside my mom's office for about a couple of years. So that started growing and getting my own place and growing it, basically. Also, another reason why I wanted to come back to PR was I already had the DX bug on me. So I wanted to, you know, come back home. That's about a year before I moved home. That's when I changed to my current call sign, NP4G. And I came home. I put a 40-meter wire up there and started doing calling CQ, basically, and getting better at CW and just learning and studying and enjoying ham radio, pretty much.
Are you in San Juan now?
My hometown of Humacao.
So you moved back to your hometown.
Yeah, we joke about that I treat my friends' kids now in my clinic. So that's pretty cool seeing, you know, people you haven't seen in like 20 years, all of a sudden they show up with kids that look exactly like them. And I feel like it's a blessing because I know a lot of people that moved out of the hometown because of work, because of life, you know, things like that. But thanks to my profession, I'm one of the lucky ones that can practice and live essentially wherever I want.
There's nothing better than being like in a small town, I think. Everybody knows you. Maybe there's a downside to that if everybody knows you also.
You have to behave, so.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I live in a small town as well, and I've never lived in small towns. I live in a small town now for 22 years, and I know everybody.
Yep.
Most people know me. You know, you can't jaywalk.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to make sure you park on the right spots. You don't, you know, run the red light.
Because people say, oh, there's Eric parking between the parking spaces again. So I don't do it. You've settled back in Humacao. You have set up a station. What is the station that you've got now?
When I moved home, so I had my little radio. It was like a 897 with a wire and all that. And then I wanted to build something bigger. There was a problem here where I was living. I had to move. But the house that I was moving to had some restrictions in terms of like HOAs and stuff like that. So my mom said, hey, listen, why don't you put your antennas back at home where you had them when you were a kid? Okay, so I did that, and I always tell my mom that she saved my marriage. So, you know, I put that up there, and I would initially, like, if I wanted to do radio, I have to go to my mom's office, go to the room, turn it on, play with it. It's been evolving, and remoting has been a blessing, essentially. We started out with the remote rigs and the Kenwoods 4800, I think it was. So we did that for a while. Right now we have the station is fully automated. It's a KP3H, a good friend of mine. Because what happened was right before the hurricane in 2017, my mom, she said that she was going to sell the house. And I needed to find somewhere else to put my stuff. And then a good friend of mine, Daniel, KP3H, after the storm, we had to sell all his radios. Half the antennas were broken after the storm. So I'm sitting down with him. And it's like, Daniel, why don't we just, you know, join together? I have the radios. I don't have an antenna. You have the antenna. You don't have the radios. Let's work together. So we did. And he's always helping with antennas and stuff for years. So we set it up at his house. I brought my equipment over. And we used to do Electcraft radios for a little while. And then after that, we switched to Flex. Actually, the station is a part of the Remote Ham Radio Network as well. So it's available. Flex and also the Power Genius Amplifier. It's a stepper antenna. Then we have that goes 6 to 40. And then we have wires 480 and 160. So we can pretty much do every band.
I'm just curious, because I hear this a lot. I see it in the way that it's written, and I see it in some of the magazines. You said that moving the radio away from the house saved your marriage. What's the objection that a spouse has to amateur radio in the house?
The problem, because there was HOA restrictions to begin with, so I knew I could probably put like a little Yagi or something, and then maybe I could get by. But she wasn't really, she's like, okay, you know, radio is important. And I always tell her, hey, listen, radio came 6 months before you came to my life. So they're very dearly in my heart. You know, it was there before you got here. And I've been married for almost 20 years now. She knows it's very important. She tolerates it, I guess. She's not a fan of it. I mean, I don't think she'll ever get a radio ticket.
I guess the question I'm asking, Otis, I'm wondering if the objection is the way it looks, the ham radio antenna outside the way it looks, or is it the competition for time, meaning that, oh, my husband, he's in his radio shack and he's not with me. I'm always wondering what the objection that spouses have to ham radio. Oftentimes, it sounds to me like the objection to ham radio is the antennas outside more than the competition for time. What do you think about that?
I agree. I think it's that. Back then, I had to do a contest. You know, I can't do contesting from home because the kids are around, the wife's around. So I always try to like go somewhere. And so you're concentrated there for just to do your radio thing. Occasionally at home, I might have it on and remote in. And also I can remote in from, you know, from my office, from myself, from everywhere pretty much, as long as I have an internet connection. So it's not like competes with her, I guess.
At least not while you're around her.
Exactly. Yeah. If I'm by myself at home, the radio will probably be on. And when she comes in, I'll probably shut it off and, you know, have dinner or something. Yeah.
What do the kids think of it?
They like it. I don't think they'll be hams. The kid likes to do like online gaming and stuff like that. The girl as well. But when she was little, she would literally like, you know, hold the mic and say, seeky contest when she was like three. That's as close as I got her to the radio stuff. They encourage it. I mean, they tell me, hey, go for it. You know, it's your passion. Enjoy it. Go for it. But I don't think they'll ever, maybe, I don't know. I had a good friend of mine. His son got his ham radio ticket when his son was like 30 something. So I'm not going to lose hope. It might happen.
We say on this podcast quite a lot that perhaps the new kids on the block in ham radio are the 35-year-olds. Things are settling down enough that they can actually focus on a hobby.
Yeah.
That's our first of two excerpts from an interview with Otis Vicens, NP4G, a Puerto Rican ham who is scheduled to join the 3Y0J de-expedition to Bouvet Island in January 2023. We'll bring you our second excerpt from Eric Guth, 4Z1UG's conversation with Otis, here on Rain Hamcast Podcast number 79, to be posted November 12, 2022. Copyright 1985-2022, Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, all rights reserved. Rain founder Hap Holly, KC9RP, edits and produces this bi-weekly ham radio hamcast without monetization. Your support via PayPal and feedback on the rainreport.com are appreciated. Rain programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. You are encouraged to download, share, post, and transmit the Rain Hamcast in its entirety via amateur radio. Thanks to Tom Shimizu, N9JDI, for posting a not-for-broadcast version of these podcasts via the Rain Report channel on YouTube. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming!